Hey everybody, it's Amanda. Welcome or welcome back to the Park Ridge Presby Podcast, the message podcast of Park Ridge Presbyterian Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. We would love for you to experience a Sunday morning with us, or you can always connect with us on social media. We are Park Ridge Presby on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We hope this message inspires your faith to make a difference for you every day. Well, I am excited to welcome Chris Chakowski back to the Park Ridge Presby Podcast. Chris was on with us almost a year ago, right? Or maybe last fall. Yeah. Chris is a member here at Park Ridge Presbyterian Church, and we're glad to have her back on the podcast. I'm going to have Chris tell us a little bit about who she is and what she's up to these days.
Wow. Well, you know, the other day I had a friend and they called me a Renaissance woman. And my initial reaction was, wow, really? And I actually had to look it up. And then I thought, well, goodness, I guess I am, because I had this long career in healthcare and I wore a lot of different hats. A good chunk of my time was spent at the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago, now known as the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. And I was involved in a lot of really beautiful initiatives to help people with physical disability and chronic illness. After I left the Institute, I was encouraged actually by former colleagues to continue my work as a consultant and an educator in the healthcare arena and also with small businesses. And several years ago, I created my company, Power to Be, which is a educational and business consulting company that seeks to empower individuals and families and business associates and pursuing things that they felt they really couldn't do. Recently, I was involved in a lot of great work with some home care companies that hired me to help them redesign and build content for a website. And also, I built another training program relative to supporting healthcare professionals and home care workers in learning about Montessori techniques in dementia care. And this was dovetailed to writing a book on dementia, which is entitled Living with Dementia Doesn't Mean You Stop Living, which is now available on Amazon.
Look at that. Did you set out to write a book? Did you know you were going to write a book? Has that always been a thing on your bucket list?
Well, it's always been on my bucket list, but never thought it was going to be on this subject. I have to admit, you know, I was drawn into this dementia arena primarily because each time I would provide a consulting project or a family empowerment program on caregiving, people would always say, oh, I love that program. Can you do more on dementia? Mm-hmm. And my wheelhouse was really in physical medicine and rehabilitation, brain injury, spinal cord injury, stroke, missing limbs, congenital diseases, neurological diseases. And I was drawn into studying more about dementia, and I found some really great synergies that I was pleasantly surprised to find. And so lo and behold, went on to get further certification as a certified dementia practitioner and additional certification in Montessori care for dementia persons.
So it sounds like you really set out to write this book to help people that were asking you to share more and do more and specifically respond to this need around dementia.
Yeah, very much. In fact, well, I always felt that there were gaps in knowledge for people. You know, we found this when I was involved in designing an education hub at the hospital. But then when I came out to the community, it was even more vibrant that people just didn't know where to turn or how to start with finding information that was really going to support them. And quite frankly, the industry, there's so much great information on Alzheimer's disease and dementia. There's so many leading institutions across the world that are studying this. But I came across an author who wrote a book called What Color Is Your Brain? Sheila Glasgow. And I really was struck by her book. And then she said, what are you doing? You need to write a book. And really, Sheila gave me the swift kick in the rear to say, do it. And because she felt, and then I, as I found, was that I was really taking this in a different approach. I was trying to help families consider dementia not so much as a disease. Yes, it is a disease, but it's a disability. And with a disability, there's ways to provide accommodation. And so the title, Living with Dementia Doesn't Mean You Stop Living, is really about developing a new mental model about this condition so that you can arm yourself with strategies of accommodation, something that's really practical, something that is simple to look at and really get right to the point and say, wow, I think I can apply this in my life. And so the design of the book, the content of the book was with that in mind and built upon a lot of research that I had done from my previous roles in life, as well as current projects that I was involved with in designing brain health initiatives with community programs.
That's incredible. And it sounds like even the title of your book comes at this assumption that we do think of memory loss and we do think of living with dementia as not a life worth living, or like a not a desirable, you know, it is a disease, right? And the impairment
sure.
is real, and the struggle for caregivers and those individuals is real. But but we also come at this assumption, right, that that's yeah, like a less than, right? Like a less than. And it
sure.
seems like in a lot of your work, you you try to bring really that dignity and humanity back to spaces and people and challenges that have had that experience of being seen as less than, or one's lived experience is less than.
Sure. Well, people hear the word disease and then they hear there's no cure, at least currently no cure. A lot of great work is being done every day. And then they think life is over. Why bother? When the reality is there is a lot that can be done. Cure just means we haven't had a cure for the disease. That doesn't mean don't do anything. And that's really what compelled me to write the book in this way and to arm families with practical strategies. Most of the people who really need this information don't have time to read a book. So I wanted it to be something that was formatted in a way that really got straight to the point. They could put in their pocketbook and refer to it. It doesn't have to be looked at from front to cover. They can look at it as it fits their needs and when it fits their needs. It's a tough subject. I'm not going to pretend that living life with dementia is easy. By no means, it isn't. And it's really hard for families because they're dealing also with grief, enormous grief. They're seeing their loved one change in ways that they never expected. And so those components of relationships and how you nurture relationships, maintain relationships, not only with your loved one, but with other family members and friends, all those are addressed in the book as well.
What a great resource to be putting in the hands of caregivers and family members. What are some of the ways that while you were writing this book or doing your research that you got to kind of test out some of these, like how would a family get to engage these practices that you're putting in front of them? Like, did you get to beta test any of that with folks?
Oh, sure.
So how are families responding to these Montessori practices that you can bring into their lives?
Well, I love when I see family members have that like light bulb moment. They'll say, oh, wow, that really hits home. And I never really thought of it in this way. I think one of the first things I can tell people is to really challenge yourself to shed old beliefs and judgments and fears that surround your perceptions about chronic illness and disability. And the reason why I say this is that we come to the table thinking a certain way. And really applying these strategies requires you to completely be open and adjust your mindset to that. And it brings out this whole notion of unconditional love, really, because when you're wedded in the way you think things should be, done, it gets in the way of you making progress to really engage and provide the care that your loved one needs and deserves. And so we start with that as a foundation, but and then provide some practical ideas for people to start thinking about ways to get to know themselves. In fact, one of the things that I'll be doing at a workshop that's coming up is going to be leading people through an exercise on getting to know you. And a lot of people say, well, what do you mean? I know my dad, I know my mother. But when the disease progresses, it's harder to communicate. It's harder to interact. And it's very easy to lose touch with who a person is. So your foundation of really taking time to know each other is going to help you springboard into engaging with them when they're not able to engage independently. They're going to be relying on you to set the stage and to figure out ways to help motivate them and comfort them and keep them included. More importantly, to help them have a sense of purpose, which is important for all of us, regardless of what stage of life we're in. We all have to have a sense of purpose.
Absolutely. So one of the questions that I wrote out, and I don't know if we just answered it in the way that you wanted to, but one of the questions was, what are some ways family members or caregivers can engage with someone with dementia?
Sure. Well, some other examples of engaging with a person with dementia is really taking a look at what brings them joy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be going through in the workshop exercise that takes a look at things that your loved one loves to do. And it really doesn't matter if they can do it now. It's what were the things that brought them joy? Because all the things that we are gravitating to in terms of our leisure interests, it helps build our identity. You know, we've got people who love, you know, music and certain types of music, or we'll have somebody who likes athletics. And there's things that overlap, right? But typically the things that bring us joy are the things that motivate us. We work real hard so that we can go and play and do such and such. And a big part of play in Montessori technique is what we call person-centered care. It's really honing in on what are the things that are meaningful for that person and adapting the activity or providing or matching the activity that meets that need. And in doing that, you are able to engage. Now, the engagement may not be exactly the way you did it in the past. For example, there might be a father who was really big in woodworking, and now his functionality has declined so much that he's not, you know, able to easily manage maybe his dexterity, safety, lots of different things regarding that task. But he still may enjoy going to visit and finding out with a family member of a relative's remodeling project, or looking at home improvement shows with somebody and engaging on that. A woman who used to be a knitter, for example, if her dexterity decreases because of the brain signals telling you how to move your hands, again, it's a brain impairment. That's one of the, you know, people forget it's not just memory. There's lots of things going on as functionality changes. But that person may find just rolling yarn might provide comfort to her, or inclusion, feeling like she helps someone. Mom, could you help me get my threads together? Likewise, a knitted piece of a blanket might be a comfort item for that person if they're looking distressed. So again, it's paying attention to what were the things that were meaningful to that person and relating it to how can we continue to bring that in and weave that in to a person's life. Oftentimes, music engages people in beautiful ways. Music is a universal language. And sometimes we forget that certain types of music, if you know the music that the person enjoyed, can also bring great comfort and avenues for engagement. People are discovering many ways to embrace this change in brain functionality. They're researching different methods to engage people and to also retain function as long as possible. The Montessori technique was named after Dr. Maria Montessori. She was a pediatrician, And many people, when they've heard of Montessori, they may know, well, this is related to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And her philosophy was, you know, providing an environment that was suited to that child. And she used that in education. It wasn't that every child had to sit a certain way and do this, perform a task or that subject. It was really what would meet that child's needs and how can we use that to teach them new tasks. She also felt that they could be very independent in tasks provided they were given the proper environment. And she had a mantra, what you do for me takes away from me. And this really applies to dementia care. You know, think about it. She wasn't, you know, what she was saying was that the more you do for me, the less I'm going to be able to do for myself. And when it applies to dementia care and just really any kind of caregiving, really, when we, our natural tendency is to do something for the person. We're doing everything for them and we're forgetting to include them in the process, because by including them in the process, even if it's a minor piece of it, still uses their physical, social, emotional, cognitive functioning. And so we want to engage a person as long as possible and come up with new ways to do that.
That was great. I'm glad I asked that question again, because I'm really glad some of that Montessori stuff came out.
Yes.
I think one of the things that I feel is so, don't get intimidated by this word, but holy about this way that you're bringing these conversations together is, you know, we in faith communities, in faith spaces, talk about the importance of being seen and known.
Yes.
And I hear that as something that you are bringing out in this approach to caregiving with memory loss and dementia patients, is continuing to see them and know them as they are in front of us, and to not give up on what we know is holy and necessary of life, of that connection, that human connection to others. And to not give up on that, because I could imagine scenarios that are just so, you know, can feel so heartbreaking or so hopeless or just draining that you can lose sight of the opportunity for connection in that caregiving moment. But what I hear you talking about, both with joy and paying attention really to who someone has been in your life, and being creative about ways to bring new ways to encounter that joy into someone's current reality, that feels just very important to me and very honoring of the person in front of you, in front of us, in those interactions.
It's really the essence of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Really the essence of everything, and really seeing the person for who they are, in valuing that person for who they are. And the entire, you know, which is interesting, if you remember, I mentioned that there were these synergies between this physical medicine and rehabilitation, the disability arena and movement, and then this dementia. And the disability movement is all about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about valuing differences, valuing people for who they are, and making the accommodation. So, you know, a person looks different, behaves different, talks different. All right, that's who they are. Rather than pay attention to why are you different, look at what's the thread? Where do we have the common values? What are our common interests? How can we all contribute to the whole? And the whole concept of Montessori care looks at the whole person. This is what today Montessori, it's funny, the technique called Montessori, which originated so many years ago, is what we call today person-centered care. Mm-hmm. But in order to really be person-centered, you have to be unconditional, and you have to be observant, and you have to listen. You really have to listen. And when it comes to the world of Alzheimer's disease and other related dementias, you really have to meet the person where they're at. And that takes a little practice, because we're all operating a certain way and we're expecting things to be done a certain way, especially if there's been a person in your life that you've operated that way for years. And so it does require a new mental model and a shift. But when you do this, you'll be pleasantly surprised on how much easier it is to provide care and to really provide that dignity and respect, which everyone deserves. And I often tell people, in fact, there's one short chapter in the book that says, in their shoes. And it's just some helpful things for families to be mindful of. If the table was turned, how would you want to be treated? And really think of it in that way. And it's really follows the golden rule, right? I mean, everything that we talk about in our churches and in our communities when we're helping families and children, you know, to do unto others as you wish that to be done to you. Mm-hmm. And it's such a simple philosophy, not always easy to apply, but if we keep that front and center, particularly when it comes to dementia care, the benefits are really great.
Yeah, I think about that foundation, that starting point you mentioned in your workshops of that mindset shift and letting everything, all those preconceived notions leave your mind and to start from a new place, and how just incredibly difficult that sounds to me. Like that does not sound like an easy first step, Chris. That's really hard.
You know, and I will be the
especially
first
with
one
like
to
a
say,
parent, right? Like, no, that's my mom. What are you talking about? She can do everything. Mm-hmm. You know, our relationship has gone one way for X amount of years, and now look where we are. You know, so to get rid of all of that preconceived experience and expectation sounds really hard.
Well, you know, it's harder for some than others based on your relationship with the person. And I have to say that straight out, because not everybody has a great relationship with their parent, their sibling, whoever their best, you know, a friend that they knew or acquaintance, somebody that may be calling upon them to be part of their care partnership. Mm-hmm. And those relationships, those previous relationships, whether they were good, bad, or indifferent, have an impact on your ability to adopt this new mindset. And then you put the layer of a parent. Yeah, I mean, we're looking at the parent. Well, you're supposed to be looking after me. I'm looking to you. You're my mentor. Now the tables have turned. And I think I challenge young adults who now they're dealing with their parents, to really be mindful that your parent is still an adult. And so it requires that approach. It's not like someone's mentioned to me the other day, you have to treat them just like a kid. I'm like, no, they're not a child. They're not a child. Yes, you are going to listen and adapt just as you do with a child, but you're not raising your voice in a high pitch. You're not belittling them. You're not talking over them. You're not talking for them. You're with them. And it's interesting, the language in terms of family caregiving has changed a bit over the last years. And we hear family caregivers, it's now become care partner. You're developing care partnerships with people. Because when you say giving, it makes you feel like I'm giving, right? Mm. And that wears you out. And so like as a care partner, you're thinking, what am I getting myself into? Oh my gosh, it's going to be so much work. And I'm like, let that go. You're a partner with them. That person who's going through this, the last thing they want to be is a burden. Are you kidding? That gets in the way, actually, of them usually revealing they need help. That's a barrier for them. They're not going to let you know they need help because they're going to think that you're going to go the other way or make these assumptions about them or not include them in conversations. So it's really a partnership. And so I guess if I would leave people with that one word of a partnership, it's really critical that inclusion and engagement, peer partnership is big because, you know, everybody's going to need to take care of themselves, of course, but we have to the only way we can take care of each other is with each other. And that, of course, coincides with that Montessori principle. It's not with, you know, not do, you know, do for, do with.
I think that's really powerful. That change of language and change of perspective is really powerful and really helpful for people.
And it takes time to get your head around it.
Yes.
doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Journey. Because what's woven in this whole topic is grief as well. And you can't pretend that that doesn't, you know, you can't say, oh, I'm not going to do that. Well, of course, you know, but you have to confront those emotions, and there'll be ups and downs. That's what life is. That's what life is. But you don't want the grief or the fear to paralyze your thinking or interfere with your ability to really show love to one another. And love yourself as well, because, you know, we beat ourselves up all the time. We're our worst critics. You know, people who are part of the care journey are tough on themselves. And so, you know, you have to go easy on yourself. Nobody's perfect. The person you're caring for is going to have rough days. You're going to have a rough day. Sometimes when you're giving it your all and the person doesn't appreciate it because, you know, they're not putting two and two together, let's say, to be able to share that with you, it's kind of hard. But again, you have to, again, put yourself in the other person's shoes, you know, and why you're doing this, and use resources. People forget that there are so many resources out there. They just don't know where to start or turn. And my book really is just one of many, many, many resources out there. I hope it can jumpstart a family on their journey with dementia. But even if you've been in it for a while, I've been told from readers that they've gleaned some really helpful insights. And that really, you know, sings to my heart, because I want to be able to help people at every level of care.
Speaking of resources, you have a workshop coming up that's going to be hosted at the Park Ridge Public Library on September 22nd.
Yes.
Who is that for? When you dreamt up that workshop, you know, you just said you want to be able to speak to anybody on that caregiving journey, but who is that workshop for? And what are your goals with that opportunity?
Well, if you're a family that's new to the world of dementia, definitely come. Perhaps you have kids even that might be interested. I know they probably push it out as an adult, but there's nothing there that they can't learn about in terms of teenagers, for example, or those in college. You know, sometimes we forget that everybody's on the family journey. It's not just the sibling or the child of the parent. You know, their grandparents have younger adults that are involved too. Everybody's trying to figure out, how do we communicate? How can we make life a little easier for everyone involved? And so I think it's held in the library to be open to the public, knowing that the different types of patrons that go to the public. And of course, if you're a health professional, you can glean some things too. So if you're in the area and you want to do something that's light and lively, I mean, this is not textbook stuff. It's intended for the consumer. But even at healthcare professionals, I have found, you know, we're all looking for ways to better relate and communicate with the people we care for. And so this will give you some additional insight as well.
That sounds great. So it's on September 22nd at the library here in Park Ridge. What time is it at?
Believe it's 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And it's going to be a hybrid.
Okay.
Those who can't go in, they've just opened up in-person programs, which is great. And so I'll be there in person, and there's a lot of interaction that goes on during the program. So if you can go in person, I'd highly encourage, if you're comfortable with that. And for those that aren't, you can go online and to the library, the Park Ridge Library's website, and just register for the event, and they will send you a link.
That's wonderful. We will include all of those details in the notes for this episode of the podcast, because we want to make sure we have that opportunity available for people. But I love that hybrid option allows a lot of people to participate in different ways, but I'm sure a workshop with you in person is very interactive.
It's a lot more fun. Yeah. And really, that's what this is all about. Mm. We want to make it light. You know, the topic is really heavy.
Mm.
We have to be light about it. And we have to show ways to bring joy into people's life and to have some fun. Because at the end of the day, that's what we're all wanting, right? We want to feel good about what we do every day, and the impact we make on the people in our lives that are really meaningful to us. So I'm hoping that the book will do that, and also that the program will do that as well.
I believe it. And in your work and in your company, Power to Be, people like families can reach out to you individually for help, or just companies. Like, where are you at in terms of your availability to people looking for more support from someone like you?
Well, I found that writing the book will probably give families some direct reports.
Yeah.
Because you really don't know where you're going to find people to come to you and where they are on their journey and trying to coordinate all of that. I'm not selling myself as a doctor or a nurse or
of course.
A social worker in that regard. But companies bring me in, of course, to do workshops to help their employees. The vast majority of family care partners are working. And this is why it's so challenging. You're faced with this new situation and you want to help and provide support, but you're not quite sure, how do I do that? Because I'm still making a living. I have a family to take care of. I have personal things going on in my life. And so companies will bring me in as a speaker for that, and different community groups do as well. So I'm hoping that the book will provide a great support for people, a great takeaway for them, because it's packed with a lot of information, but done in a way with sound bites that are easy to nibble on and take something away from.
Absolutely. As you think about your work, do you have a next big thing? This book, you know, seems like it came because that was what your community needed from you, and you wanted to help and support people in this way. Do you know what's next for you? Is it more work in this particular arena, or are you waiting to kind of see what else your community lets you know?
Well, it's interesting. I get drawn to different topics.
Yes. That Renaissance woman thing coming back, right? You have a lot of different passions.
But one of the thread in all the work that I do really is about connection and helping people stay connected to things that bring them joy and give them a sense of purpose in life. And there's so many ways that we can contribute in the world. I hear a lot of people struggling with, you know, what am I doing? Where am I going? And this book speaks to that. I have one of the chapters is getting to know you. I'd love to do a little getting to know you tour where, you know, we bring some of the things that I'll be speaking about in this book, but apply it to just really anyone in life. It helps kids. It helps young adults and seniors, all facets of life. You know, we're humans and we are ingrained in staying connected to each other, and identifying ways to do that, I think, is really important. It leads us to our life work oftentimes. And if we're finding that we're in work, that we're not feeling fulfilled, having other outlets that do fulfill you makes you feel whole. And so, a big piece of my journey, I feel, has been a divine intervention, because the people that have come on my path and have encouraged me have come about in ways that I have least expected, and can't really explain it other than something from the divine. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage people to spend time with getting to know themselves and being comfortable with who they are, and being happy with who they are. Treading lightly, as I mentioned, is not just for care partners, it's for everyone. You know, on yourself, don't be so hard on yourself. We're all learning. Life's a journey, and becoming a lifelong learner is also a journey. But I have found, when I open my heart and my mind and my soul, different people come across my path and help me see light in a new way. And I hope that this book will do that. The cover was designed with the intention of hope and positivity, and really seeing the possibilities in your life. Sometimes we forget that there's so many possibilities, especially when you're in the thralls of dealing with or confronted with some real serious issues and concerns. Those are real. And so if you can see some light to this and ways to turn it and reframe it, it's a good thing.
Thank you so much, Chris, for putting this book out into the world, to really listening to this call that's on your life to serve and support people in who they were created to be and to be seen and known right where they are for exactly who they are. I think that's such a gift that you bring to this community here at Park Ridge Presbyterian Church. And I know the Park Ridge community at large and in your work. So thank you for saying yes and for listening and for doing what you do. And I'm really excited that this book is in the world and a resource that we can point people to.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks again for listening today. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can subscribe to this podcast or find us on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. We are at Park Ridge Presby on all platforms.